Welcome to Space Force. I'm Jason Tondro.
I'm Theo.
And we're here to talk about the latest episode of Star Trek Discovery, season 4, episode 4. Do I have that right?
Yep.
All is possible. To me, like, this is a whole different show than it has been for the last three seasons. I was very skeptical the first episode. It was not doing it for me. I was not excited to watch it. But it's gotten very good. And in particular, it's the subplot game is totally on point for this show now. And I love how we're seeing B plots and C plots every episode. And I really feel like it's very different than it used to be with Burnham. Burnham is no longer feels like the center of every scene like she used to in the past. But we have jumped in. So Theo, what were your first thoughts on this episode?
Well, why don't we do a review of the plot?
So there's three plots, and correct me if I miss anything. So the main plot ostensibly is Burnham and Saru travel to Navarre. And they're part of the sort of diplomatic presence for Navarre's rejoining of the Federation. But negotiations break down when the Navarre delegates insist on an escape clause from the Federation, and the president decides she can't do that. But it's hinted that both parties knew this was going to happen, and so they invited Burnham and Saru here specifically to solve the problem, which they can't solve because they're constantly being looked at by, there's too many eyes on them. They cannot compromise in public. And so they've invited a sort of diplomatic secret agents in here to solve the problem for them. And eventually this is solved with Burnham suggesting, well, we'll set up a committee, a neutral committee that's not part of the Federation or part of any other planet, and they'll just review like any issues that a planet has. So if a planet wants to withdraw, they'll bring this issue up to the committee. It'll be like a court basically, and we'll review the validity of those claims. And I, Burnham says, in a move which to me is so classically Star Trek, that a captain of one starship would volunteer to be the most important person in the galaxy. Burnham, the captain of this spaceship, am both a member of the Federation and a native of Navarre. I was raised and trained on Navarre, so I understand Vulcan ways. And I'm the perfect person to be the bridge between these two groups. So let me be that bridge. Let me be that person. And everyone goes, okay. And that's the solution to our problem. Meanwhile, there is some super amusing flirting going on between the Vulcan, the president, and Saru.
Tarina.
Tarina, that's it. Tarina. I was just looking up her name. Yes, thank you.
The moment they saw doing like the meditation, I'm like, oh. Jason's super happy.
Because it starts really early, because she sends him like, she basically buys him drinks, right? Like Tarina sends him a little appetizer from his home planet. And then they do that great bit where Saru goes in, where Suzuru's, the meditation bit, the best bit about the meditation scene is not the touch hands and have sex in the Star Trek approved manner. Rather, it was the scene where she says, you have to keep your eyes closed, Saru, because he keeps looking at her. He can't take his eyes off of her. And I love that line. That's my favorite line in that whole plot. It's when she says, you must keep your eyes closed. Eyes are to remain closed. Anyway.
I really wish that at that point when Saru closed her eyes that she would have opened them really briefly.
Yes.
I guess we're getting into the weeds already. But this is the plot I'm most excited to talk about.
Yeah.
Because the nice thing is like you said, it uses the rule of three.
Tell me.
The beginning, middle, and end. So yeah. The romance plot is introduced with the tea,
yep.
And Michael immediately like does a Conk style teasing of his of whole bestie.
Yes.
And Saru, like, totally standoffish, like, doesn't sell it, but you can tell is like feeling it.
Yes.
Then that was the scene that we're talking about, which is the meditation. That's the middle, that's the reminder, right?
Yeah.
And then the payoff is the end when it is Torina's turn to initiate contact with would you join me for tea?
Yeah.
And then the two of them walk off quietly together.
Yes. Yeah.
So like structurally speaking, like, they maximize the minutes.
Yeah.
Like, every minute that plot subplot is brought up, like, it does, you know, it does little in the episode. If you cut all of it out, you probably only save about like 4 minutes of runtime.
Right.
But the actors do such a wonderful job of selling and explaining, okay, this is where we're at with this relationship. Like, we've gone past the meet cute. We've gone past the intelligent conversation of the last season. And now we're going to mature it to something else.
Yeah, so for those that have forgotten or aren't following up, the meet cute was when Saru was captain of the Discovery. And she came onto the ship, and he sort of gave her a walking tour of the Discovery while also defending new Starfleet, the new Federation, and what he imagined that it could be in this reconstituted post-Burn era, although the Burn had not yet been solved.
The nice thing is Saru is talking about what the Federation was, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Saru is hearkening back to Conk era, you know, we were disparate people of all on a starship together, working together to solve problems, except now they've expanded it out to actually have more than one alien, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which gets us to the Tilly plot.
Yeah, okay, so that's all in theory, that's the main plot. But of course, I, card-carrying member of the Tilly Appreciation Squad since episode one of this show 3 years ago, the main plot was Tilly, who volunteers to lead. Well, she gets volunteered by our doctor.
Dr. Culber.
Yeah, Culber. And this funny thing was, is that, like, they immediately show Culber and Tilly having a counseling session, which then we see again in the C plot with Culber and Book. Right after last episode, when I said, boy, I'm so glad they never show us counseling sessions. Right. So right after Jim Johnson and I were talking about how, you know, he wanted to see the counseling sessions because that's the role-playing goal. And I'm like, no, don't show them, because it'll be an unrealistic representation of therapy. This episode goes right into it, but we're skipping ahead. So the Tilly plot, the B plot, Tilly gets volunteered to lead a training mission for Starfleet Academy. And this reminded me at first of the fact when she beams down to Starfleet Academy very briefly last season when they visited Earth. We don't really see much of it. They're there for like, you know, 30-second scene or something like that. But and she's there with Adira, and we meet a few cadets, four cadets, one of whom quickly dies. The training mission goes awry, as they're wont to do. I love the fact that one of the cadets says, hey, this is all a simulation, right? We're all in a big hologram simulation. It's all part of the... And just to avow the audience of that escape hatch at the end. Like, well, we're going to kill somebody, and then we'll just bring them all back at the end of the episode, and we'll call it a holodeck. And Tilly and Adira... work together to bring the kind of cadets together. They settle their issues. One of the cadets is an Orion. Another one, his family has suffered under the Orions during the Emerald Chain and all that business from last season. And she basically succeeds. She brings the team together. She gets them to cooperate against big giant alien monsters, and they get rescued. But as a result of all this, we get this really powerful scene. Now, she gets... there's a couple of scenes with Cronenberg, whom we saw from last season, who returns to be our Starfleet representative this episode. And he offers Tilly a job as a teacher at the Academy. And this leads to an important scene between Tilly and Burnham in Tilly's quarters, where they make some jokes about how, hey, remember when we used to room together? And, you know, and Margaret Wise is such a wonderful comedic actress. She delivers all that stuff so great and so naturally and spontaneously. The scene does not feel forced. It feels very natural. And I love that about her work. But it ends with her saying that she's going to take that offer and she's going to leave Discovery and become a teacher at Starfleet Academy. Thea, what'd you think?
We are one step closer to the whole being on the captain of the Voyager.
Well, tell me what you think, because I think I know where you're going with that, but I don't think that's what's happening. But go on.
So Mary Weissman has said she's coming back before the end of the season.
Yeah.
New Star Trek loves the big cavalry moment. There's no other term I can use to describe it. Almost every season of Discovery has employed it to a certain extent. Okay. Star Trek Picard famously does it with Captain Riker.
Sure.
So I think there's going to be that cavalry moment, and it's going to be at least acting Captain Tilly on the bridge of the Voyager.
Okay.
Because there was precedent for Captain Kirk. He was one of the first things we are introduced to in When No Man Has Gone Before, in TOS, is that when he was a lieutenant. Walking like a book stack with legs or something that Gary Mitchell calls him?
1 second, Theo. Will you rewind? You froze for me right after you said that there was precedent for this, that Kirk in that episode. And then
Talking When No Man Has Gone Before, which is the second pilot of TOS, the first Kirk episode, we are introduced to Kirk. And one thing that Gary Mitchell comments is that he was an instructor at the academy. The other thing that we know from Kirk is that he was the youngest captain in Starfleet. That's what made him special.
Right.
Was that
right.
His age was, I think he was like 32 or something.
Okay.
Someone's out there screaming at their computer, like, it was 28. Like,
yeah.
I don't have that fact. I didn't double check before I went on to that edge. So there was precedent for a lieutenant who came from the academy to become a captain of a starship.
Okay.
And I think we're one step close to it. Now, in terms of, like, that's the macro plot. Like, that's fantasy booking. Like,
yeah.
That's the fun of being a Star Trek fan, right? You can pull things and do fun backstory and whatnot. I did not like the Tilly plot.
Okay.
I thought the Tilly plot was unsolved because of the third plot, which is the Culber book plot.
Yeah. All right. So in the Culber book plot, it's mostly just about book. Culber trying to counsel Book, and at first it seemed like last episode, like Book was kind of over the hump and was starting to heal, but we learned from this episode that whatever the Vulcan mind meld did didn't really stick, and Book is still in a pretty dark place. And so then we get these scenes of Culber and Book in counseling sessions. Why don't you go on about what you think about that?
The counseling, like, we went to the thing that we were talking about last episode. We went to wrote standard TV therapy session.
Yeah.
With a standard therapy session, a week plot, we'll introduce the characters. He doesn't want to work there. To get Book to open up.
Yeah.
Once Book starts opening up, there's a little level of trust, some camaraderie is built. And then we go into, let's do an exercise. He pushes away the sand, and then he has to complete the exercise by the end of the episode.
Right.
I did not like that plot point.
Yeah.
Because, like we said last time, like, the nice thing is we're not seeing it, so we can't be disappointed by it or by it following conventional TV logic, which is introduce conflict, resolve conflict within 45 minutes.
Right.
The thing I did like about it is that Book has to go to therapy. Like, the mind meld isn't a catch-all. Like, grief doesn't work that way.
Sure.
When you're going through grief, you have moments of, I'm okay, I'm accepting, everything is stable, or I can, whatever the new normal is for you, you can adjust to it. But then time moves on. Maybe something reminds you of it. Maybe you're just sitting there washing dishes and next thing you know, you're crying.
Yeah.
Or you're just emotionally shut down, unavailable, like you backslide. Like progress is not linear. And I like the fact that it introduces that concept with book. What I don't like is that all that time that we spend with book and Kobo, even though they're wonderful actors, I love every minute of their interaction. That was time we could have spent fleshing out the Tilly plot, which I thought was weak because it pretty much relies on the Galileo 7 method of unity, which is you have a unprepared leader who's uncertain of how to handle the situation, and he or she, in this case, has to learn the lesson. She has to do the cult thing, you know, really get out of a comfort zone to distract the alien menace. And when we got to the everyone's arguing on the ice sheet, and they settle their differences pretty quickly through exposition.
Okay.
I didn't feel that that was armed.
I thought it went okay, but all right.
Well, I didn't feel like we spent enough time with the characters to know what their things were against each other. We're told, okay, stop arguing, in that very discovery kind of like everyone's talking over each other, but we're not shown it.
Okay.
So we're not shown the dysfunction. Like if maybe we had like been introduced to them without Tilly, but like if we had seen them interacting in a way without Tilly, and then she introduces herself in that, like I needed a little bit more there.
Interesting.
Behind the 11-6, which is what I'm calling that plot point, because they ain't even named the shuttlecraft. I'm like, you have a shuttlecraft, name it something. It could be anything. I mean, heck, you can even go for like the obvious one, just call it Icarus. I mean, come on.
I was going to go for a North Pole exploration reference and call it the Shackleton or something.
Yeah, it's something like that. You could like all those Star Trek Adventures fans would have like loved that
for sure. Right?
But I just felt that the Tilly plot was underwritten, whereas I think that the for me this episode, I don't feel like it. I don't think it was a bad episode.
Yeah.
I do think it was more emblematic of what a typical Star Trek Discovery episode is. There was some beautiful moments of writing in this episode. The acting is always on point. Like even when I'm like, I don't think this is owned, I still think the actors do a wonderful job.
They do.
The material they're given. Like Star Trek hasn't had this good of an acting cast. Like there was no weak links on this cast. And this cast has like young people on it, which is like surprising because typically children actors, not little children, but younger actors, you know, tend to be a little bit stiffer with material.
Yeah.
And I think the actor who plays Adira is just charming.
Yeah. So you felt that you would have taken the time from the book subplot, the book Culber subplot, and given it to Tilly and use it to flesh out those cadets more.
And I also would have given maybe a few more minutes with Bonham, because even though the Saru stuff sings, I would have given maybe a reminder to the audience that she was a citizen of Vulcan, that she was a citizen of T'Val, because that plays into the resolution.
It does.
And even though I've watched every episode of the series multiple times at this point, I know that as an audience member, I think I could have used a reminder, or at least a human moment of, oh, I remember when this was being built, or something like that. Like some sort of like moment with whole connection to Vulcan, whole connection to the people, because it, from the way the episode's written, it comes out of nowhere in terms of the resolution, even though the series itself owned it. I don't feel that this episode does enough lifting in terms of reminding people, oh, she's Spock's sister.
I liked the episode more than you did. I know you didn't hate it. You thought it was perfectly
fine. I didn't hate it at all, but I do think that like each episode has been like a leap of improvement.
Yeah.
And I think this is where that pandemic feeling is coming in. And I'll get to that once you say your piece.
I liked the episode quite a bit. And I love the fact that they didn't give Burnham more time. I thought she had enough time to do what she needed to do. But that whole plot often, I mean, to me, was more like a Saru subplot than a Burnham plot, which I loved. The book Culber Scenes didn't do a lot for me, I confess. However, I think the most interesting part of all that was when Book tried to flip the script, and he tried to ask Book, I tried to ask Culber, like, have you done this? Do you do this? Do you have things you want to forget? And Culber tells the audience, yes, I do, but I'm not going to talk about them this episode. And that was an interesting bit of foreshadowing for me, which I'll be eager to see the show pick up later in this season, because they would be fools not to do that.
I imagine it has to involve Ash Tylo, right? Like, Ash Tylo, the captain's previous boyfriend, kills Cole.
Sure. Yeah.
He's counseling the new boyfriend.
It could be it. That could be it. I don't know. But I want to go back to the Tilly plot, if I can.
I
don't think she's being set up to be captain of anything. And the reason why I say that is because of Mary Wiseman. And thank you so much for correcting me on her name, Mary Wiseman, because I confused it with Margaret Weiss from my RPG gaming background, and I apologize. So on the very, very tiny chance that anybody is listening, I'm so sorry, because I'm a huge fan. All right. She delivers that speech where she describes how the day I got my Lieutenant Pips was the worst day of my life. And this is, to me, a retcon of the character and the character's past. Before, it always seemed like she wanted to be a captain, like she wanted to be in command. But now, according to this speech, she actually realizes when she gets promoted that she only wanted to be in Starfleet so that she could disobey her mother. And that when she got the pips, she realized that because her mother was not here to see her, it didn't mean anything. That it didn't mean anything to her. So I think that having her suddenly show up as the captain of another ship at the end of this season would be a terrible misuse of that speech and that decision. I don't like that decision because I love Tilly's character and I want her on the show. But if you're going to establish that she never really wanted to be in command anyway, and she was just doing this to fuck you to her mom, she didn't know that that's what she's doing, but that's why she was doing it. And that makes perfect sense, by the way. Like, her mother has been this invisible presence in Tilly's life since the first season. And I love this observation by her that even now, here she is, 9,000 years in the future, and her mother is still guiding her life. And I even in the fact that she's rebelling against her mother, and so that again is, you know, ruling her life. I think she's going to be a teacher at Starfleet Academy for the rest of the show. And Mary has said that she does return, and she also said that she will be in a different uniform when she returns. But that to me is, that just means she's in her academy teaching uniform.
Captains wear maroon.
Yeah, I know. But I'll be honest with you. I think the writers of this show are just bored with Tilly. I think they have other characters that they find more interesting. We look at Tilly's role in the show. She was always Stamets's kind of second engineer, like the other person in the engineering room. But now Adira does all that. She was first officer for the end of last season, but now Saru is back and Saru is doing that. And her other role was always as kind of like Burnham's best friend, you know, Burnham's BFF, but now Burnham confides in Book. The Venn diagram that Tilly served has separated. She no longer has any purpose on the ship. And although she was established as having an arc, that her arc was, I'm going to be a starship captain one day. I just don't think, like, how, she can't be captain on Discovery. So, and we've got other, and I want to note, by the way, that a lot of the outcomes of this are good. Like, I think that the writing on this season focusing on a smaller cast of characters and giving them more time. The core cast that we've been seeing in these last few episodes with Burnham, Book, Saru as our trio, as our main triad. And then Stamets and Kober and Adira as our kind of secondary family that's underneath them. And then we have, you know, an occasional Tilly scene and a few other bits, but that's really kind of the focus of our show. And that has allowed we've lost a lot of secondary characters. I mean, I love Owo and I love all of those other characters that get like, and I keep forgetting the name of the alien guy.
Linus.
That's exactly who I was thinking of. And Linus, who, you know, and who got like a cameo bit, like when we're all like taking a week off and taking time off, we got to see Linus, you know, at the bar. We don't give any of those characters lines anymore. And we use that time to flesh out subplots for the secondary characters. And I like, it's good show. It's great writing. But Tilly has suffered, and I just don't think the writers have anything interesting for her to do. And they like Adira and Kober and Stamets and those other characters and Book especially more. And so it's time to move her off and spend some time on the characters that they are excited to write about. That's what I think happened.
So I'm going to pull from two sources. I'm going to pull from Babylon 5.
Good.
And I'm going to pull from wrestling.
Okay.
So this is what I think is happening with Tilly in the macro plot.
Okay.
In Babylon 5, there was a plot point that comes up with recurring frequency, which is if you do a good thing, but for the wrong intentions,
yep,
you spoil the outcome.
Yep.
And this is sort of like Linneal. Like Linneal is the one who gives us this lesson. Like he and then he goes off and he does the Lancelot plot with Delenn, right?
Yeah.
I think that what they're doing is they're interrogating the idea that Tilly's the only character with the family. Unfortunately, Spock's family, like that plot, we know that story. We know how that story ends. We know how sort of like Spock grows up to become he grows up to become Star Trek, right?
Yeah.
And he shuffles us through various things. And they'll explore Spock in Strange New Worlds. But for the most part, no other characters had a life outside of the ship except Tilly. So I think they're interrogating the idea that she was going for the captaincy originally for the wrong intentions. She was going as a fuck you to her mom, and now they're going to renegotiate that and sort of like have her grow as a character by not showing that growth on screen.
Okay.
So this is where the professional wrestling comes in.
Sure.
Which is, in the 80s, there was many territories, but because of the way TV was structured, you only saw TV from your local promotion, right?
Okay.
And when acts would get stale, because they would, like wrestlers would get stale, audiences wouldn't be responding to them,
sure,
they would go away,
yeah,
and learn a new hold. So they would travel to these different territories, and sometimes they got new names, but they would learn something. And then when they came back to the original territory, they would come back to such a huge pop. And I think that's what Tilly is going to do. The writers are going to move her away, have her sort of like renegotiate and interrogate her intentions for why she wants to be captain. Because it's no longer to prove to her mother, because as she said, her mother's dead.
Yeah.
But she can still be a captain. That doesn't necessarily negate her becoming Captain Tilly. She'll learn something, she'll learn a new hold, and she'll come back and she'll, maybe she saves the day in a crucial moment, or maybe she just helps out. But I think that's where we're sort of looking at it, so that the bridge crew is less crowded, because we do have those characters that are in the you know, Sulu checkoff role in TOS of I captain, I'll do the thing captain.
Yep.
And you need that because it's still a Star Trek show. It's still set up like a Star Trek show.
Yep.
It's not breaking that mold in any way, shape, or form. But the focus is on this secondary family of characters with Stamets, Coble, and their surrogate children, Gray and Adira. The one thing I want to comment on Gray at this moment in time.
Yeah, good.
First, I love the new look. The space mullet thing shows the spots. Like,
yeah,
that is a look. I really like it. He looks fantastic. I saw like they reduced there was like a Star Trek card game and they showed an image of Gray and I thought, I don't like this new look. But when I saw it in motion, I was like, yes.
Okay.
Yes, please. But we're told that he interacts with people and he can make connections really easily, whereas Adira has difficulty with that.
That's right. That's right.
And we're not shown that. So this entire time, this whole plot point is no one can see Gray but me.
Yeah.
Now people can see Gray, but we don't get to see that.
Yeah, Gray never leaves the bedroom.
Gray hasn't had a scene with another actor outside of Coble and Stamets. I think Saru saw him in the when they went to that planet with the kid.
The season finale last year.
So I think other people have seen him, but this season he has a body. And that initial interaction, we're told about it, but we don't get to see it. And I feel a little robbed.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, in this. We should have seen Gray at the walk into the bar and make a million friends. Like, if this is what I love how Gray's like, Adira's like, well, how will you just walk in there when you don't know anybody? And Gray's like, I'll introduce myself and then I'll know people. and it seems so natural for Gray. And you're right. Like, we should have seen that happen rather than have Gray narrate what they're going to do when they leave.
Even if they kept the scene the way it was and just had it to like Ocean's 11 sort of montage, you know, when the characters sort of plan out the heist.
Sure.
But then they start showing how the plan is going to work.
Yeah.
Like, even if they was like, I'm just going to walk in there. And then you see them walk into the ball and say hi to someone and then strike up a conversation. And like, I wanted to see that. Like, even if it wasn't a giant moment, I really wanted to see someone interact with Gray and be like, hey, you're a cool guy. Hang out with us.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Even if it was Linus, like something. I know the last episode they gave him, he was a piano player. So apparently Linus can play poker and the piano.
Nice. Good on Linus.
Adding things to his character sheet every time we see him.
I think Linus has got like an Omni skill. Like every episode, Linus can just swap out one skill for one other skill. Mm-hmm. Like this week I'm playing the piano. Next week I can play poker, and then next week
The last episode, you know, the eyesight thing. Like I can see things that really good. Like that was the character trait on that JoJo episode
for sure. The most interesting thing that did not happen this episode that I was kind of waiting for, but we ended up getting the book Cobra subplot instead, was further progress on what the anomaly is. We got told very briefly at the beginning, oh, by the way, I want to note that I love that we started with the captain's log.
That's a classic track.
It felt so Star Trek. Like there's the discovery in orbit around a planet, captain's log, and I could feel those original series vibes all episode, and I loved it. I loved it. I wish they would do that every single time. But we didn't really get any progress on the main plot at all. At one point on Twitter, you actually called this a sidetrack. It is kind of like three sidetracks all pushed together. But did you think that was a weakness? Do we need to keep pushing the main plot along every week?
Yes and no. and sorry for being ambivalent. There was a couple things that won't kill. So the writers of this show wrote this season when the pandemic was just stalling.
Okay.
And they said they were inspired by the isolation.
Yeah.
And sort of that there was this thing that we can't see that's larger than life, that's threatening all of our lives.
Yeah.
And we're all kind of like, we have to, like, the whole plot of this episode essentially is you have to stay in place. Like, the captain mandates all in all for everyone. Of course, we don't get to see anyone do the all in all. Like, yeah. We're told that this is going to be Tilly's all in all, but there was no rest and relaxation.
Right, right.
Which, you know, again, like, if this was Next Generation, we would probably see, like, well, if this was Deep Space Nine, we would see, like, people show up in funny costumes with no explanation and then leave. Like, there was a couple times that happens with O'Brien and Bashir and Kira and Dax.
Okay.
But it's like, I understand the theming of it is there's this big threat. We're not going to advance that plot. And the experts are doing their job. We see Stamets working on it. Right. We're reminded of the Omni threat.
Yeah.
But we can't deal with anything with the Omni threat because we don't have enough information. Well, the information we do have, has it been, like, it's still raw data. And you see Stamets, you know, very briefly, and he's just working, right?
Yeah.
I think that was good. My overall problem with it is they introduced two episodes ago, they introduced the idea that this thing is shifting direction.
Yep.
If they had just left that plot point where it's still moving through our galaxy, but it's on a chartable course, then we wouldn't have these exposition lines in our dialogue of, okay, we're not going to deal with the main plot point because it's still going through, you know, uninhabited space.
Yeah.
Like, it's still in a, like, if they hadn't introduced that plot point at the end of episode two, I don't think I would have much of a problem that the main plot isn't being advanced because I don't know that, oh, okay, it's moving direction. Like, there could be something else behind it.
Yeah. At the end of last episode, it was very much a calm before the storm kind of comment from Burnham. You know, she was like, okay, well, sometimes these moments of quiet are all we get. And I was really ready for, like, okay, disaster, four alarm disaster time hitting in this episode. And it didn't happen. And I'm like, okay, how long are we going to be climbing this roller coaster until we finally hit the crest? So it's an interesting delay. I'm not complaining because I like the episode that we got, but I did notice it.
Yeah. And again, if I was looking at the structure of the four episodes that we had, I don't think it would be much of a problem for me in terms of nothing got moved. Because I'm not a plot person. Like, you want to give me character stuff?
Yeah.
I'll eat up your character stuff.
Yeah.
You want to give me Tilly has to get the five crew members to work together to advance everyone's plot point and get them home safe. I'm cool with that. Just give it some time to breathe.
Yeah.
But I think the idea that this thing is moving direction and we don't know what that means is the thing that's bothering me in terms of, like, the main plot isn't being folded. Like, the previous episode, I liked it because it was three subplots, but they all have the same theme.
Yeah, that's right. They did.
And they all have the same emotional resolution. So even though they weren't interacting with each other, it felt like a unified whole, whereas these three subplots, there was no connective tissue between any of them.
There, you know, somewhere in the writer's room, they probably do think that there's a common theme that links all these subplots that make the episodes about. But maybe just because we didn't have a title like Choose to Live, like, I guess in theory, the thing is anything is possible. Is that the unifying theme? That's the title of the episode.
I suppose that is, but I don't. I guess you can say that the idea, the theme is people coming together because Book and Cobble have to come together to resolve, or at least not resolve, but follow his healing process.
Yeah.
Tilly has to get the cadets and Adira to all work together.
Yeah.
I think the other problem is I don't know what the cadets' names are. I know I was told it.
Yeah.
But because I wasn't able to form a connection with them, I'm like, I feel... Chip, because I want to see, you know, what what does an Orion Starfleet officer look like? What does a male Orion Starfleet officer look like? Like, I want to explore that and those sort of gender politics with that culture.
Yeah.
And the Tellarite just like being angry. Like, I want to know.
Was he a Tellarite? I couldn't even tell. Was he a Tellarite?
I think he was supposed to be a Tellarite because he had the little tusk.
Oh, I figured he was some other species. Okay.
I thought also, like, that's the problem with some of Discovery's redesigns, because I look at them and I'm like, I think that's a Ferengi. Oh. Okay. Everyone's telling me on the internet that's a Ferengi. Yeah. That must be a Ferengi, what they look like.
Yeah.
I don't think it was as jarring with the Klingons, even though they had the biggest design change, because they were acting like Klingons.
Yeah, yeah. And everyone was, yeah, they were clearly labeled as Klingons, so at least we knew what they were.
And all Bonham's whole subplot with Saru is coming together, and we have like a romantic coming together. So I think though, I think you're right. I think though is, I think it needed a hand-holding moment to be like, okay, like the last episode we had the choose to live when the path ends.
Yeah.
You know, you essentially die in that moment. Yeah. But you can continue to live with the new path. We don't have that sort of moment here in this episode where it was like, okay, audience at home, here's the theme. Here's my thesis statement for this episode.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of left a little emotionally like, okay, I guess that's a nice revamp of the Galileo 7. And I guess the ice monster was more parasitic ice than we got in that last episode. You know, with the West on.
No, sure.
So, okay. I wanted more from Tilly, especially if this is Tilly's swan song for a while.
Yeah.
Like, I want her to go out on top, like, you know, have a big moment. And they do give her big moments. And she does have to do the cult thing, which is run away, you know, run down the hill and, you know, turn on her phaser and then shoot her phaser. Like, she totally goes out like a cult.
The classical scholar in me was very happy to see this, because it's a straight up replay of the last few pages of Beowulf. When Beowulf says, okay, I'm going to go fight the dragon. Everybody stay here. And he goes and fights the dragon, and everyone else, like the dragon monster shows up, and they're all going to run. And somebody's like, no, we can't run. We have to help. And so in this one, this is like Beowulf, where Beowulf has a happy ending, where everybody's like, okay, yeah, she told us to get out of here, but we're going to use our phasers. and they come and they help her and they save her. And it was, I love that. I like the ending.
So no other podcast are you going to get Star Trek Talk, Professional Wrestling Talk, Babylon 5, and Beowulf in the same 45 minutes.
Space Force, baby. That's right. Only one place on the internet. All right. Well, on that note, we will be back next week. I do feel like I have to briefly update everybody with the international situation. Our third regular host, Aid Smith, who's a vital member of our show. It's a hell of a time for Aid just to even watch this show in the UK. Pluto plays Discovery, but you can't. It's hard to find, and you can't stream it whenever you want. You have to watch it. Have to watch it live. And that sort of ruled out our regular guest host. So that's really unfortunate. And I wish that Paramount would solve this problem as quickly as possible. But in the meantime, we'll be back with guest hosts and guests on the show. And we'll see you next week on Space Force.